Dear ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the RWE conference call. Markus Krebber, CFO of RWE AG, will inform you about the developments in the first half of fiscal 2018. I will now hand over to Gunhild Greef. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good morning to everyone on the phone and to those who are joining us via webcast. I'm joined here by Markus for the presentation on the first half of fiscal year 2018. We continue to concentrate on RWE standalone figures since they are relevant for our financial steering and are also not affected by any changes to the financial reporting until the agreed asset swap with E.ON closes. As always, in order to focus on your questions, we have kept it short. Let me hand over to Markus.
Thank you, Gunhild, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our H1 figures show that we had a good first half of fiscal year 2018. Adjusted EBITDA came down by 21% as expected, mainly due to lower realized generation margins and volumes. However, our trading activities showed a very strong performance in Q2. The operational performance in the first half year is in line with our expectations. Hence, we can confirm our full year outlook for RWE standalone. Following the planned asset swap with E.ON, the IFRS figures for the RWE group have to be adapted accordingly. Those activities which will be transferred to E.ON in the long run are classified as discontinued operations. This primarily includes the grid and retail business of innogy. The outlook we gave in March has to be amended as well. The revised outlook only reflects the accounting-driven adjustments and not any changes to our expectation for the operational performance. More at the end of my presentation. The execution of the transaction with E.ON is progressing well and as planned. In mid-July, we signed an agreement with innogy on a fair integration process and innogy's support for a swift implementation of the planned transaction. This includes, in particular, innogy's support in obtaining merger clearance and other regulatory approvals. Further, innogy will support the preparation of the transfer of innogy's renewables business to RWE. In this context, it will also be reviewed how the transfer of the renewables businesses can be implemented as soon as possible after the transfer of RWE's stake in innogy to E.ON. All in all, the agreement is an important step, and it should give additional impetus to the execution of the transaction. The planned transaction with E.ON was also the reason why the two rating agencies, Moody's and Fitch, had put us on credit watch, which is standard procedure for such a transaction. In the middle of May, Moody's concluded their analysis and confirmed our investment grade rating of Baa3 and restored the outlook to stable. Moody's based its judgment on our conservative financial policy and expect that we will be in line with the relevant debt thresholds. We are optimistic of delivering on this expectation as we will improve our leverage factor with the transaction. The minority stake in E.ON provides us with additional financial flexibility. Let me remind you that Fitch rates us at BBB flat with a stable outlook. Here we are still on credit watch evolving. At the beginning of June, the German government nominated the members of the Commission Growth, Structural Change and Employment. The Commission is tasked to identify measures which will close the gap to the 2020 climate goal as quickly as possible and ensure the achievement of the 2030 CO2 reduction targets. In addition to the environmental targets, the Commission should also take into consideration security of supply, affordability, as well as social aspects and the avoidance of structural disruptions. In addition, the Commission shall develop a plan for the phase-out of coal-based power generation, detailing the necessary companion law, economic, social, and structural measures. The Commission held its first meeting on June 23rd and is expected to present first proposals by the end of this year. We hope and expect that the Commission will deal with the complex topics based on factual expertise and reach a consensus which will also provide planning certainty for the companies involved. The timeline, however, where results are expected by the end of year, looks very ambitious. Let me now move into the results. Slide 4 shows the development of our adjusted EBITDA. For RWE standalone, it amounted to 1.1 billion euros. The decline is mainly a result of lower realized margins and lower generation volumes. The adjusted EBITDA includes the energy dividend of 683 million euros, which we received at the end of April. Slide 5 provides the performance details of lignite and nuclear. The earnings decline of roughly 200 million euros for adjusted EBITDA in the first 6 months is mainly driven by lower realized generation margins and volumes. The reduction in volumes is partly a result of the closure of our Grundremmingen B nuclear unit at the end of last year. Furthermore, we had more and longer planned outages compared to H1 2017. Looking at the outlook for the full year, we expect adjusted EBITDA to be between 350 and 450 million euros. The European Power Division realized an earnings decline of 26 million euros. Adjusted for non-recurring items, it nearly reached the level of H1 2017. The earnings decline from lower margins was offset by the income from the UK capacity market and operating cost improvements. For 2018 as a whole, we can confirm the outlook with an adjusted EBITDA contribution of 300 to 400 million euros. This brings me to our current hedge position on slide 7. Average hedge prices for our outright position 2019 to 2021 stayed flat compared to the level we reported in Q1. We have increased our hedge position slightly from 2020 and 2021 to 90 and 40% respectively by an increased implicit fuel hedge. Let me also remind you of our long-term carbon position, which we have financially hedged through to the end of 2022. In other words, a change in carbon prices should not affect our generation margins for the next 5 years. In anticipation of your questions, I can confirm that we have also already taken measures on our open carbon position for post-2022. But please understand that we will not provide any details on our position due to the sensitive nature of this information. On page 8, you can see the development of fuel spreads until the end of June 2018, which are relevant for our hedge prices you saw on the previous slide. The graph looks slightly different to the previous one, as we, instead of average monthly figures, we now show end-of-month data to bring the graph in line with our hedge prices on the previous slide. Fuel spreads continued their Q1 decline in April and May before starting to recover strongly at the end of June. Let's move to the supply and trading division on slide 9. We saw a good trading performance, which was driven by a very strong second quarter. While our gas and LNG business posted a good performance, it lagged behind the very high result of last year. Besides that, we had a negative effect from a value adjustment within our principal investment portfolio. For the full year, we confirm our earnings expectations for this division of between 100 and 300 million euros. Ladies and gentlemen, slide 10 provides the earnings drivers down to adjusted net income. Our adjusted net income amounted to 683 million euros in H1. Besides the typical adjustment for the non-operating result and the corresponding taxes, we have mainly corrections in the financial result, driven by the mark-to-market valuation of securities under the new IFRS 9 rules. And now on to distributable cash flow on slide 11. In the first 6 months of the year, distributable cash flow amounted to 829 million euros. This is disproportionately high and may not be extrapolated for the full year, mainly due to the inclusion of the full energy dividend in H1 and the typical cyclical pattern of our operating working capital. With regards to the change in provisions and other non-cash items, I would like to point to the timing effect of CO2 provisions mentioned on the slide. With the transfer of the CO2 certificates to the National Clearing Authorities in Q2, we have completed this year's utilization of provisions, whereas the additions are only halfway through the year. For the year as a whole, we expect to be in line with our initial guidance of roughly 650 million euros. The change in working capital is partly driven by seasonal effects in trade accounts payable and inventories, which are typically higher over the winter months. Typically, we see a negative working capital in H2. However, we expect to end this year with a positive balance. The details of the development of net debt are shown on slide 12. At the end of June, net debt stood at 3.7 billion euros, approximately 0.8 billion euros lower than at the end of fiscal year 2017. This mainly results from a high inflow of variation margins in H1. They will revert once the derivatives are realized or commodity trends turn around. We expect this to mainly happen in 2019 and thereafter. Now on to our RWE standalone earnings outlook for 2018 on slide 13. As already mentioned earlier, we can confirm our earnings outlook for the year as well as our target to pay a dividend of 70 cents for fiscal year 2018. This brings me to our outlook for the RWE group after the change to the financial reporting. With Energy's grid and retail business classified as discontinued operations and therefore no longer accounted for in adjusted EBITDA, we have to adjust the outlook we provided in March 2018. We forecast adjusted EBITDA of continued operations to reach 1.5 to 1.8 billion euros. The comparable previous year's figure amount to 2.1 billion euros. Energy's continuing activities, which are the renewables business, gas storage activities, and KLAC, are expected to contribute an adjusted EBITDA of between 700 and 800 million euros compared to 785 million euros in 2017. We see CapEx for the continuing operations of RWE to amount to 1.2 to 1.4 billion euros. We are stating gross CapEx here, so before proceeds from disposals or farm downs. Out of this, approximately 0.8 to 1 billion euros is attributable to Energy's continuing activities and will be mainly spent on growth projects in the renewables business. In conventional power generation, we still expect CapEx of approximately 400 million euros, predominantly for maintenance and modernization purposes. Furthermore, it includes small growth projects, for example, the conversion to biomass co-firing in the Netherlands. RWE Group net debt for continuing operations is expected to be moderately below the level as at June 30, 2018 of 5.4 billion euros. With this, I conclude my remarks and we are now happy to take all your questions.
Thank you, Markus. Before we start the Q&A session, we just wanted to draw your attention to a slide pack we have put together on the pro forma combined renewables business. You can find it on our IR website, and we hope that this is going to answer the many questions we have received over the last few weeks. And with this, operator, could we please start the Q&A session?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin our question and answer session. If you have a question for our speaker, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue. Once your name has been announced, you can ask a question. If you find your question is answered before it is your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel your question. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. One moment, please, for the first question. The first question is from Alberto Gandolfi of Goldman Sachs. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. I'll stick to the total question today. The first one is on renewables. Could you please comment on the Tritonol farm down? I know it's technically energy, but considering you already own the economic interest, I was surprised not to see a price disclosed. The Asian press is talking about 700 million pounds just for the right to participate in 40% of the project. So I guess the question is this ballpark figure broadly okay, and should we think about it as a right to participate to the project, and how would you intend to redeploy capital in your pipeline? And the second question is about sensitivity to carbon. You were talking about being financially hedged until 2022 previously. Can perhaps ask you a question in terms of where do you see the profitability of your combined cycle going in the next 2 to 3 years? In terms of volumes and spreads, if we go into a situation whereby carbon goes to switching economics, so we're not even talking about the coal commission here, it's going to be coal shutting down production and perhaps lignite being impacted too, at least for your competitors out there in the market. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Alberto, for the questions. The first one on Triton, not I probably have to disappoint you. I mean, I cannot give you more information than you have got from Energy yesterday. A general comment, I mean, we appreciate the farm down. I think it's a great project to do some diversification there, given also the size of the combined portfolio in the UK. It's also favorable for the future combined business. But on the price, I cannot give you any additional information. Redeployment of capital is part of the strategic question, and I mean, as we have said before, we will answer that after we had the intensive strategic discussion with the management teams, and that will probably not be disclosed to our future strategy and investment focus before closing one. On CO2, yes, you are right. I mean, we are financially hedged until 2022, so any movement of the carbon price should not affect the profitability of RWE. Of course, that does not mean that it changes profitability of the different technologies. And your question pointing regarding CCGTs. So our expectation is that our continental CCGTs, I mean, in the UK, the picture is already totally different, but our continental CCGTs should, over the next period, next years, contribute more than it currently contributes, but that has many factors. One is probably the price constellation, so hard coal, gas, and coal, and spreads, but the other one is also a tightening of the market with the ongoing nuclear exit and also additional coal capacity leaving the market. So in a tighter system should make flexible generation more favorable for ancillary services, but also maybe load factors. So we expect an increased contribution from CCGTs.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alberto. Next question, please.
The next question is from Vincent Gilles of Credit Suisse. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. Good morning, everyone. Well afternoon. Two questions. The first one is on slide 7, on the hedging 2021. Before that, it's not real surprise. And I do realize it's numbers to the end of June, therefore the little uptick in power prices spread and the whole change in assumptions had not taken place yet. But I would be interested to understand why you increased by 10%, not a very large number, but still not a small number, your hedging and what we should be expecting. I guess what I'm trying to get really to is how long would it take before we see the impact of the current strength in power prices on this part of your business? Sorry, it's a long question. A second question, much simpler. Variation margins, the impact on the debt. You flagged that we should not get too excited and it will be offset partly for the second half of the year. Could you maybe develop a bit more what exactly is in these variation margins, and will it be a full offset? Will it be just a partial offset? Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for your question. On page 7, we have increased the implicit fuel hedge also in 2021. I mean, this gives us still exposure to the upside of increasing spreads, and we have hedged against falling coal and gas prices. So what we actually did is at current hard coal and gas prices, we have sold fuels and we have bought CO2. Any upside in power prices stemming from tightening markets or anything like that would still benefit this implicit fuel hedge. And this is part of the risk management where we said, I mean, the exposure to fuel prices, absolute food price levels, we're going to hedge and take out over time because we have no directional clear view on hard coal prices over the next 3 to 4 years. Now your question, when do we see an uptick here in hedge prices, so where we currently still show the 29, which is unchanged to a quarter ago? We had two underlying effects here. I mean, as you can see that the average blended price setting spread, which is shown on page 8, was lower at the end of June than it has been on the end of March. So this was a negative factor on the hedge prices. But the position which is still open, so the light blue one, not the shaded one, but the light blue one, which will close over time, is now closed at the existing prices of 40-something. So even if spreads don't move, you should over time, when we switch into a hedged position, see an increase in the 29. So maybe I just extend my answer. So whatever happened to spreads 2021, we expect the hedge price will go up because the blue one, which is not yet hedged, will be hedged at much higher prices. And on 2022, we are convinced that the spreads are currently too low and we're going to see a continuing recovery until delivery, and we keep our spread position here open. We also expect their prices to increase. Your second question, variation margins, let me put it this way. We don't want you to be overly excited. Of course, it is a positive development that net debt comes down, which also shows that the positions we have on, which are now fully marked to market, were the right hedge decision, because otherwise we would see a negative mark to market. But you should not double count the effect, because we have now hedged our generation margin in the outer years by implicit fuel hedging and also doing something more on the CO2 side. And that will, of course, materialize in EBITDA, but that is now already upfront in the bank, cash-wise. You cannot double count. So it was a wise decision on hedging, but you cannot double count when it realizes in the EBITDA in the future years. But please, I mean, this is also sensitive information. I will give you not the exact split, which hedges and which commodities drove the inflow of variation margins.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, please.
The next question is from Deepa Venkateswaran of Bernstein. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Thank you. So two questions from my side. First one on, now you've had some time to think about the new structure post the integration of renewables. So I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on your thoughts on the capital structure and dividend policy for the new RWE. And second question is on nuclear compensation. I think in the interim report you mentioned that it's a medium triple-digit amount. What form will this take? Is it you selling these volumes to, say, E.ON, or is it getting the money from the government? Some idea on when we should expect this.
Yeah, Deepa, thanks. Let me start with the easier one, where I don't have to disappoint you again, which is the second question. I mean, nuclear compensation. We are obliged by the law that we enter into serious discussions with our peers, which probably need some additional production rights. We have done that. We are in the process of negotiating with them. If we can conclude a deal here, we probably see the result earlier. If we cannot find agreement, we have fulfilled our obligation, and then we have to wait for the compensation from the government, which will but only happen in 2023 after the last plan has been shut down. But in either case, we expect a similar amount, which is now determined by the details of the law. And this is the stated mid-three-digit million amount which is expected. On the new structure and dividend policy, I mean, of course, we had time. We are still discussing it. But given that we cannot share all the detailed plans with Innogy and E.ON's renewables business already, because this is sensitive information. It is still an outside-in view of RWE on the details of their business. And please accept that we will only come out with all details when we had this discussion, and that cannot happen before closing one. But you can then, shortly after closing one, expect us to present the full picture, including dividend policy, investments, and so on. Also, the intention on the E.ON stake, which is a relevant building block when it comes to dividend policy and investment amounts. On the debt side, we think that we feel comfortable with a net debt to EBITDA ratio of between 2.5 and 3. It will still take some time with the rating agencies to sort out how this new RWE, which is a new animal combining conventional generation and renewables, what the business risk profile is exactly. And then we're going to see whether we need to achieve the lower or the upper end or somewhere in the mid. But that is not the relevant question for us, because given the financial flexibility we have, we can manage it according to what is needed. But that's where we're going to position the company debt-wise. We want a strong investment-grade rating, so we are fine with the BBB flat we have from Fitch, and over time we want to achieve the same with Moody's.
Thanks.
Thank you, Deepa. Next question, please.
The next question is from Peter Bisziger, Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi there. Two questions from me, please. Firstly, your guidance for lignite and nuclear for the full year implies that the second half is going to have to be an awful lot better than the first half. So I was wondering if you could just explain the drivers behind that relative improvement. And then the second one, just going back to the renewables business, maybe you could just give us a flavor of how the cooperation agreement that you've signed with Innogy will allow you to sort of start steering the renewables business today. For example, I think you've already said there's going to be some provision for you to assist in financing new projects. So anything you can tell us there just to help us understand how you're going to be able to move renewables forwards. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks, Peter. You are right that this is probably artificially when it comes to cyclicality, but we actually expect a higher result in the second half of the year than in the first half for the lignite and nuclear segment. And the reason why this is now different than in previous years is the overhaul cycle, because we have seen significant planned outages in the first half of the year, and we have only very little ones in the second half of the year. And in the last year, it was the other way around on the lignite side. So we feel very comfortable with our guidance of 350 to 450, which also implies that we need a better H2 than we have seen in the first half of the year. On renewables, I mean, to be very clear, we cannot interfere with steering the business. We talk about three independent companies until merger clearance. There is no coordination when it comes to business decisions. These will be taken by Innogy and E.ON on a standalone basis. But what we have agreed with Innogy and also E.ON are a couple of things. The first one is that we will now set up joint project organization to pre-plan the integration process, which also implies that Innogy will start a project carving out the renewables. And we will also look into all potential measures to transfer the renewables business as fast as possible after closing one. So what this means net-net is that probably the time between closing one and closing two, which we presented when we announced the transaction, can be shortened. It's not yet determined, but we are together working on a solution to that. And on the financing side, we said probably if Innogy their financing needs some additional money and intend to farm down projects we probably want to keep, they will now approach us and discuss whether we are interested in providing a bridge equity finance so that they don't need to farm down projects we want to keep. So there is kind of a process about the future business scope, and that is also, I think, very helpful. These are the areas where we have seen improvements over the last 2-3 months, where we have now agreement how to progress jointly.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter. Next question, please.
The next question is from John Musk of RBC. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, everyone. Two questions as well. Firstly, just looking at the distributable cash flow, which I know was perhaps higher due to some of the working capital, et cetera, but even so, it's at nearly 2 times the level required to pay out the 70 cents dividend for the full year. So how much of it should we expect to reverse in the second half, and is there, you know, potentially some upward pressure to that dividend guidance? And then secondly, on your hedging slide, I note it's only a small reduction, but in the outer years, you've reduced your volume expected from the outright production from 85 to 80 down to just 80. And is that due to any assumptions you're already making around the coal commission, or is that just general market trends?
Yeah, thanks, John, for the questions. Let me start with the latter one. Yeah, we have always given a guidance, and now we think it's definitely more at the lower end of the guidance, so around the 80 terawatt hours and not in the mid-range. So we decided to make that assumption also transparent to you. There is no specific driver behind it, so it's not that prices are different and in the money production has significantly changed. We also don't have new assumptions on potential outcome of the coal commission in the earlier years. It's more that we are now more confident that we're going to be more at the lower end of the given guidance, and that's why we decided to put only 80 here. Profitability-wise, it will not have any significant impact. On the distributable cash flow, yeah, I mean, I agree. We are happy that we see a very strong contributable cash flow. If we go through the different line items, I mean, you know the EBITDA guidance we have given. I made in my speech clear that we expect for change in provisions and other non-cash items a full-year figure of around 650 million euros. CapEx guidance is around 400 million, and change in operating working capital. I mean, over a longer period of time, that should be fluctuating around zero. Since we have seen a significant negative effect last year, driven by two elements. One was phasing out of working capital elements. Another one was a very mild winter and higher than usual gas storage inventories. And this should definitely revert this year. So we expect a 3-million-digit lower positive effect in working capital for the full year. And the other one, I mean, cash interest is not relevant, and hybrids are already the full year effect here on the slide. So we definitely expect a very strong distributable cash flow. What that means for dividend, we're going to decide at the end of the year when we also have clarity about how that's going to look like next year, and then we guide the dividend for the following years. But yes, it's a positive development.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, John. Next question, please.
The next question is from Ahmed Farman of Jefferies. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, everyone. So first question on slide 6, I think where you earlier suggested like for like, you have a flat EBIT. But if I look at cash contribution, it's quite a significant step down. I mean, so could you perhaps talk about what is driving the jump in CapEx and even pre-CapEx, the reduction in cash contribution? And then the second question I have is on your output and load factors and output in coal and gas. If I look through your first half results, I see quite significant decline in coal output, you know, 25% year on year. Gas is also down 13%. Is that largely due to underlying trends, or are there any phasing effects? And if it is really down to underlying trends, how does this fit with your view of, you know, higher contribution from spread generation and recovery in spreads? Thank you.
Yes, thanks for the question. First one on European power, slide 6. I mean, the CapEx is still a very low, it's a very moderate figure. We have seen a very low CapEx last year, given also the overhaul cycle. So the 67 is more in line with our guidance here for the full year, where we expect CapEx to be around 200 million. It was artificially low last year. Other than that, there are no specifics. Cash contributing is adjusted EBITDA and CapEx. What we have seen last year is a one-off effect from the sale of property in the UK, which amounted to 25 million euros. Maybe one thing to highlight on this segment, especially development in the UK, from the to-be-expected capacity payments, we have seen one-third in the first half of the year, whereby two-thirds will be paid in the second half of the year. That is also reflected already in the full-year guidance of 300 to 400 million euros. On the load factors and the production, on coal, what is important to keep in mind that coal production, if you look into the detailed regional split, has especially come down in the UK. And that was because we transferred Aberthaw into a kind of a reserve. It is not actively producing this year. That was significant one. And another one was in Germany, where we closed the hard coal plant further together with Steag. So it's an already announced closure. The general load factors on the hard coal plants, which are still running, have not changed. On gas, it is different. In gas, we have seen last year the special effect where we had 2-3 weeks of no wind, no sun, and all existing conventional generation was producing significantly more. That has not been repeated this winter. But we don't see any structural changing trends or anything. So it's business as usual for those plants which are active.
That's fine, Almut.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Next question, please.
The next question is from Javier Garrido of JP Morgan. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I think it's just one question left from me. Coming back on your hedging, you have increased significantly the volumes hedge in the spread capacity from 50 to 80% in the second quarter. And as you mentioned in the call, spreads have increased in June, but they still remain low versus where they have been in the last 12 months. I was wondering if you could elaborate on why such a significant increase in the volumes hedge in the spread capacity, whether it's risk management related or whether you found the absolute level of spreads very attractive during the quarter. That would be very helpful. Thank you.
Yes. Most of our in-the-money spread positions are in the UK and in the Netherlands. And, of course, the spread prices we give you on aid is Germany. So the increase in hedged spread positions in 19 was especially the UK and the Netherlands.
That's fine, Javier?
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question, please.
The next question is from Sophia Savantidou of Exane. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my questions. I'll stick to two as well. One is a follow-up on what you said earlier on the lignite and nuclear EBITDA. Obviously, you are quite hedged for achieved prices for 2018. At the start of the year, you felt you needed to give about a 100 million EBITDA range for the full year number, but now we've already seen the first half, so we still have a 100 million EBITDA range, but on just the second half, which is effectively half the number. So I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on, with the price pretty much locked in, what is the variability that we could see and what could make you be at the top end, midpoint, or lower end of that guidance range. And then the second question is on the coal exit committee. There was a press article today talking about some suggestions that Lignite provision should be reviewed in the same manner that we had for nuclear provisions. So I was wondering what would be your view on that, whether you see that as an opportunity to remove these lignite provisions from your balance sheet, or how would you think about it, and what would you want to see the committee do with that? Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Sophia. First on lignite and nuclear, or also the other generation segment, I think we are very happy with the given guidance, so we feel comfortable, but it's, I mean, still a bit too early to hint in a clear direction whether it's the upper end, the lower end, or the mid-range. And, I mean, given that we feel comfortable, it maybe also hints where we currently see it evolving. So let's wait for another quarter to give a more directional view on where we end up in the guidance. On the coal exit and the discussion about the provisions, yeah, I think that was not a decision by the Commission to deal with the topic. It was more from some politicians to suggest they should also look into that. I mean, that is now an expert topic. Let me maybe briefly explain how we think about it. The comparison to the nuclear liabilities is totally wrong, because on the nuclear side, the decision was to review those provisions where the government takes over the responsibility and the financing. And part of the deal with the government to bring exactly that in line, that those who can determine the cost level, which is the government when it comes to final storage of the waste, should also be responsible for the financing. We still have kept the other part of the provisions, which is, by the way, two and a half times bigger than the lignite mining provisions, to decommission our plans and do the packaging, and there no review has happened, because everybody feels comfortable that IFRS rules and our auditors and all the transparency we have to create is fine. And that is exactly the comparison to lignite. We are responsible for the recultivation. We are constantly doing it. It's not something which is going to happen after the decommissioning. I think we have already recultivated bigger areas of land than we still will use in the future. So we don't see any comparison to the nuclear example, which would, by the end, if that is really, that if that would be done, would be the opposite which have been done on the nuclear side, which would then bring financing and responsibility in two hands and not keep it combined in one hand. We currently, and that is the last part of your question, we currently see no initiative by the government or anybody to discuss whether the government should become responsible for this task and should take also the money. They see it as a, compared to the nuclear topic, a minor topic, also in terms of size of the liabilities, and they all want to keep the responsibility with the company, and then also the financing should be with the company.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Sophia. Next question, please.
The next question is from Sam Arie of UBS. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. I would like to ask two questions, please, on your future renewables business. And Gunhild, as you mentioned, you published a very helpful document on this morning, so thank you for that. My questions are, the first one is quite simple. I just wanted to ask what level of return you think will be achievable on future renewables projects you haven't secured yet, in terms of project returns versus WACC. That's a question I've been asking everybody this results season, so I'm interested in your perspective on that. And then secondly, just stepping back a minute, when I look at the level of ambition from some of the countries you operate in, and for example, I see the German regulators planning for an increase of 90 to 100 gigawatts of wind and solar capacity by 2030. So that's what, 7 or 8 gigawatts of new renewables every year in just one country. Well, then I wonder why the industry continues in the mode of auctioning developments one by one with, you know, a gigawatt, 2 gigawatts of capacity up for grabs each time. Do you think that over time we might see the auction model offering significantly higher volumes to secure even greater cost reductions? So, for example, could you imagine a model where a given country would auction off packages of 5, 10, maybe one day 20 gigawatts of new capacity in one go, to be delivered over a longer time frame, obviously? But I feel like something is changing here, and I'm interested in your perspective. So those are my questions. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Sam, for the question. I mean, the last one is a political question or of the regulatory framework. And I mean, we also sit here puzzled and see how things evolving in Germany. If they are serious on reaching their targets of 65% renewables by 2013, something needs to happen on both ends, additional renewable volumes to be auctioned, but also the necessary investments in the grid. And both is delayed. But if you ask me whether we see some indications, especially in Germany, that they want to change anything, we don't see anything. Maybe as you, we sit here and being a bit puzzled how they really want to achieve that. But so far nothing is discussed in terms of different approaches to auctioning, also the entire regulatory framework around renewables and security of supply. So what in terms of expected returns, that is a more difficult question. It has two elements. The first one, what is the right WACC for a given project and the risk profile? And the other question is, what do you expect to earn on top of WACC? I mean, depending on the different regions and what we have seen in the auctioning and also where Innogy and E.ON are now successfully delivering projects, we think that you can earn a decent margin on top of WACC, depending on which technology and market. And it should be at least 1.5, maybe up to 2-3% above on WACC.
Okay, that's very helpful and very clear. Thank you for your answer.
Thank you, Sam. Next question, please.
The next question is from Lueder Schumacher of Societe Generale. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. The first one is on clean dark spreads. Marcus, you mentioned the quite strong recovery in clean dark spreads from June. What was the driving force behind it? Is it just power prices catching up with few commodities which had been running up quite strongly, or did the market actually get tight over the summer, perhaps coal plants struggling with supplies? Be interested in your view on that. And then also on the carbon topic, where do you currently see the early fuel switch, and how much carbon abatement can actually take place at that level in your view? There's also, well, strictly speaking, not a third question for me because it's been asked already. I just wanted to clarify on the volume, on the outright output 2020-2021. You said there's no specific reason behind it, but you're now more confident that it come out at the lower end. I just wonder what is this based on, this greater confidence that you're going to be at the lower end? Is it sort of a marginal lignite plant that was hardly earning any money being taken out of the planning process, or just would be interesting to hear your reasoning behind that? What made you more confident?
Let me start with the first one, Luda. Clean dark spreads, I mean, that's now pure speculation. I mean, technically, of course, power prices have increased more than hard coal and CO2, and that widens the clean dark spread. What the driver is, why the market reacted like that, because it's a financial market, I don't know, right? I mean, you typically see from time to time, you see that power is lagging the fuel complex, so that coal and CO2 move faster and then power moves a bit later, especially in the outer years where the liquidity is a bit more constrained on the power side than it is typically on the fuel complex, where you have much more liquidity in the market. I'm not aware of any specific argument why it now widened at the end of June. The second question is a very interesting one. What can really happen? I mean, of course, at current CO2 prices and the fuel complex price constellation, you already see first fuel switching, because the very inefficient hard coal plants, the old ones which are still in the system, are currently not economically. It takes place. But to have a significant amount of CO2 abatement from fuel switching, we probably need higher prices, but it's now gradually starting. The interesting question, how much can really be saved or reduced by fuel switching? That amount is definitely not 100 million tons. It's in the two-digit million area. So if you see the shortage of CO2 supply in the coming years, which is maybe a couple of 100 million tons, this can never be solved by fuel switching, whatever the CO2 price level is. But I think this is a too short-term sighted view on the CO2 market, because the most relevant question is what's going to happen with this surplus and what happens with forward hedging, because of certainly different price constellation and CO2 prices will probably change hedging behavior of industrials and especially utilities. And that would then bring demand for CO2 certificates down. But this is a market which is very difficult to analyze fundamentally. It's more, I would say, game theory, what people will do at what kind of price level. But as we have said before, we expected an increase, and I would not rule out that CO2 prices will go even higher. And the last one on volumes, on the 80%, so to be very clear, there is no new decommissioning plan or whatever that we take out an additional lignite block and so on. So we have always given a range, because we also gave for the other years a range. Now we have moved on in time, so we feel a bit more clearer that we should give you the transparency that we are more at the lower end of the 80 to 85.
We were always at the lower end, Luder, so it's just kind of narrowing the guidance, if you want.
Okay, thank you. Just one follow-up question. When you mentioned the definitely not 100 million tons possible abatement from fuel switching, but double-digit, does this refer to Europe or just the German market?
No, that's the European market.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Luder. Next question, please.
The next question is from Jose Lopez of Millennium. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for taking my question. I have two questions, mostly related with the UK and possible extrapolations to other markets. So the first question was about the increased participation of batteries and demand-side response in the UK. And yesterday we saw an aggregator come in too. So how do you see that impacting your expectations for ancillary service revenues? Are you seeing any pricing pressure in the UK on the ancillary service market? And do you foresee this trend occurring also in the continent? That was one question. And the second question is, your UK CCGT fleet is relatively more efficient than some of your peers. We had the beast from the east, so we had a little cold snap in H1. And yet, and coal output is down across the system, and yet your CCGT generated a little bit less than in H1 last year. Can you take me through what's behind that? Did you have some statutory outage or maintenance that needs to be considered? And if we adjust for that, you would have actually done a little bit better. Thanks very much.
Jose, thanks for the questions, and very well spotted on the CCGT in the UK. We could not fully benefit from the beast from the east because we had some minor unplanned outages in our CCGTs, also weather related, but unfortunately, especially in that period where prices were very favorable. Of course, we could partly offset that by selling the gas, which we didn't need because also gas prices were very high, but in the end, this unplanned outages resulted in the situation where we made exactly the money we had hedged up front, but we could not realize the additional upside, and that is also reflected in the produced volume. So very well spotted. On the batteries in the UK, yes, our expectation is that we will see a continuous expansion of batteries in the market. It will also bring down some of the ancillary services prices, especially the very short-term response. But on the other hand, the additional renewable new builds will also make the demand for balancing the system, will bring the demand up. So currently on a net-net basis, we expect that we're going to keep the profitability level we currently see for our fleet in the UK.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jose. Next question, please.
The next question is from Nick Ashworth of Morgan Stanley. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Hi, morning, everybody. Two from me. I guess as a sort of a follow-up to that question, thinking about portfolio optimization in the near term. So obviously, there's all the focus on the big deal into next year. But are there small disposals that you are wanting to make? Are you happy with the portfolio as it is today? Is there stuff that you want to add? Are you spending more money in new technologies? What's going on with the current business, and then how should we think about that over the next couple of years? And then secondly, just a clarification on net debt. The 4.5 to 3.7 at mid-year, I think earlier on in the year you were saying that the full year should be closer to where it was last year, but I feel like it should now be closer to where it is at the moment by full year, and I just wanted to get some sort of clarity around where net debt will be by the end of the year. Thank you.
Yes, Nick, thanks for the question. First one on the portfolio. I mean, we do some, let's say, minor growth investments into the portfolio, to name two of them. One is we invest in the biomass conversion of the Dutch coal plant. We will bring AMA 9 to almost a 90% biomass firing until the end of this year, and also in Eemshaven up to 15% biomass co-firing. That is one smaller investment. And of course, we will now also bid into the auctioning process in Germany, where the grid operators will auction grid stability reserve, which are smaller gas-fired power stations in the area of 100 to 200 megawatt. And if we get that secured, we are also investing there. But we talk about little investment there. On the inorganic M&A side, if we can get hold of, let's say, gas and hydro for the right prices, we would add that to our portfolio in the market. But, I mean, we are investigating that now with potential sellers for the last years. And, of course, it always needs two to agree on the price, and we definitely want it for the right price, or we keep our existing portfolio as it stands.
On that, that's
Sorry, and on net debt, yes, I mean, if you take the 3.7 and compare to last year and year figure, it's definitely significantly low, but since variation margins are volatile, let's give it another quarter until we update our guidance here.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Thanks, Nick. Next question, please.
The next question is from Oscar Najar of Santander. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Oscar Najar from Santander. Yes, one question regarding the hedging in page 7. Previously you said that now that power prices are higher, if you had the light blue area, your average price should be higher. However, we have seen that in the last quarter, in the second Q, the volume has gone from 30 up to 40%. And the price achieved has been more or less the same at 29. Obviously, this has to do with the next page, that is the spread of the red line, that is the call for 21, decreasing. But why don't you have been fully hedging the position with a dark blue instead of continuing the fuel hedge? And why don't you do that in the following months? Because the power prices are much higher and you have hedged 3, 4, 5 euros per megawatt hour higher. That's the question. Thank you.
Yes, Oscar. I mean, there are two reasons for that. The first one is by converting the outright position into the implicit fuel position, we implicitly hedge the power price level because we take out the risk of falling commodity prices, especially hard coal and gas. And the other aspect is that especially in the outer years, so 2020 to 2021, we are liquidity constrained if we just use the power product. So by using the fuels to also go short them and implicitly hedge the position, we have access to more liquidity to risk manage the position. Otherwise, it would take much longer to reduce the risk of the outright position. And, I mean, to be clear, on 2020, you will not see at current price levels that we increase the dark blue area, because we think that the market is undervaluing the situation or underestimating the situation, and the financial markets are not reflecting the physical fundamentals. And we have seen that before, and at that price constellation, we're not going to hedge.
Thank you.
Thank you, Oscar. Is there any more questions?
There are currently no further questions. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. We haven't received any further questions. I hand back to the speakers.
Thank you very much. Then I just rest to say thank you for attending the call today. We at the IR department are available for further up questions. And, yeah, enjoy the rest of your day. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect.